Someone once told me that no one says life is fair. When you hear that when you're young, you have no idea what it really means. Once you've lived a little, and then you lose everything, suddenly it makes sense. This podcast is a true life memoir of someone who lost everything and is rebuilding in search of who they once were. They're sharing their story as part of their healing process, and so that anyone else out there living through similar circumstance knows that they're not alone. Hey everybody, it's Dave the Clone here, checking in with the next installment of the Feeling It, Healing It, A Diary of Recovery podcast. And, honestly, I don't even know what to write about today. If you can call this writing. It's the day after Easter. And, the family is still visiting. My mom is, recovering from foot surgery, so my sister and her kids, the twins and the toddler, are all here. And we actually had a really cool time. I think they're heading out tomorrow. They have a whole rest of their week planned. They're going to be going up to New York with the kids, and I think they're going to a Knicks game one night, and they're going to do a bunch of touristy stuff. They're going to stay over in Jersey City, not far from where they used to live. It's their spring break. So I was really happy that I got to hang out with them. And we went down. We were at the Rehoboth Beach boardwalk area. We got to spend a day doing all kinds of fun stuff, like going to an arcade and winning a shit ton of tickets that they promptly spent on some Pokemon cards that it probably would have been easier to just spend the money to buy than trying to win tickets from these claw machines at the Zelke's arcade. But it was a lot of fun too, like the whole atmosphere of like, oh my god, he got 1,000 tickets, hey Uncle Dave, let's try and get some tickets over here. And my brother-in-law got one of the big 25,000 ticket prizes that he pulled out of the claw machine. So, you know, the atmosphere was one of just having a lot of fun. We grabbed lunch down there and we went to a vintage toy store, and I saw basically all of my childhood on display, because all kinds of like He-Man action figures and G.I. Joes that I used to have were either they had vintage ones still in the box, where they had them loose in the discount bin. But it was pretty wild because, I don't know. It's like moments like that are such time capsules. You know what I mean? Like, we're like, I didn't expect to ever see these again. And then you go, I wonder if I could get some money for the ones I still have, if I could find where they are. I don't even remember where they might be. And I've been in one of these sort of introspective modes in the last week, trying to decide things like, is it time to think about trying to get rid of my comic books? Because I'm sure some of them are worth a little bit of money. And if I offload my whole collection, maybe I could get a couple grand. And a couple grand in hand right now wouldn't be too shabby. Would actually be pretty useful. And but it's one of those things where it's like every time you get to the edge, you know, you're like, okay, the whole walk up to the edge, you're like, I'm doing this. I'm ready to do this. This is happening. And then you get to the edge and you're like, really? Do I really think I can do this? Should I do this? Is there really no reason to hold on to these? I know I haven't even thought about cracking them open or reading them. And I do feel like so like distant from certain areas of these nostalgia things, you know, like with what we've finally arrived at the live action comic book movie era. And they've already overdone it to the point where people are kind of starting to lose interest and the quality is definitely starting to diminish. It's almost like, well, I still love the books, but if I touch them, the value that I might be able to get for them decreases. I mean, touch them any more than I already did to read them when I first bought them 20, 30 years ago. And then I start to think to myself, you know, so much of all of the work I've been doing in the sort of law of attraction, power of positive thinking sort of arena is all about kind of realizing that focusing on things like that can be like an anchor dragging you down, holding up your progress. And that, you know, then there's the whole Marie Kondo approach where if it doesn't bring you joy, it's time to get rid of it. And I do feel a slight nostalgia. The last time I think it was over a year ago now, when I had them at my sister's house and my nephews, who were very big into comic books. They still are, but it's weird. Like, you know, they didn't want to buy any or even look at the comic books when we were at the vintage toy store yesterday, and they had a big section of comic books. But, and they hadn't been even talking about Pokemon cards. But then as soon as we started winning tickets to the arcade, it was all about the Pokemon cards. And yeah, it's so weird because like nostalgia has been such a big thing on this, in this journey, on this show, in my efforts to get life back on track. And there have been so many times that it has been a positive force, and then there's so many times that it's been sort of a negative force. Like last week when that song, so interesting that last week was this whole, it just happened to be an anniversary, and so many of the elements of it were an exact repeat of the day that it was the anniversary of. To be thinking about that a week later, and I've still listened to that Mockingbird song quite a lot. and it's actually gone through a couple waves in the week since, where there were some days I listened to it and I was actually grooving a little bit, you know, singing along, feeling pretty happy. And then there were moments I listened to it and it like choked me up and brought me to the verge of tears. And I have a friend who's into more of sort of the astrology side of things, and apparently wherein not only was a week ago a lunar eclipse, which was messing with the energies, we're in a Mercury retrograde situation for another 7 days after today. It's also April Fool's Day I'm recording this on. That's interesting. I almost forgot about that, actually. And earlier today, I saw a post on Facebook that said that Warner Brothers had decided, after 3 years later from releasing the Snyder Cut, that they'd finally decided to give Zack Snyder 2 movies to wrap up his Justice League story. And I was like, yo. And then I realized, like, oh, it's April 1st. Somebody's playing with all of our emotions. Such an interesting... And it's funny because I see it through the eyes of my nephews, where so many of these things, like when the adults tell them like, oh, it's this day, and they're just like, okay, cool, you know, and like it doesn't even occur to ask like, oh, why is there a day where everybody plays tricks on each other? Why is there a day when we all fool each other? And I know that there probably is a history of why April Fool's Day is even a thing, but as an adult, it's sort of just like another element of the cruelty, you know what I mean? And you realize like people feel even more unrestrained on today than they usually do, as far as caring what the effect of the things they say is going to have on people. You know, there's a very impassioned cult following for Zack Snyder these days that would really be kind of beside themselves with joy if it were to suddenly come about that we were going to get more of the movie universe he was creating. Like, I've been definitely outspoken when I first saw Batman Superman in the theater, Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, because it was disappointing. And since, when I've watched the Ultimate Edition, which had an extra half hour cut back in, I was like, wow, what a much better movie. And then, of course, Justice League, with its whole 4 hour cut that they have versus the joke that we got in the theatrical cut. It's like, man, you know, this guy really was doing something epic. You know, he was doing something really cool. It resonates with me a lot more. And I've find that I've been getting less and less patience with people who are seemingly kind of enjoying being absolute shits to other people from the comfort of their computer chair with the anonymity, or at least the separation of the internet, to let them kind of get away with just being dicks about things. Ironically, a video surfaced this week of a woman being confronted on her front lawn by three alleged FBI agents who refused to show their credentials to the camera regarding posts that she made on Facebook. So we're finally getting to the point where there's evidence of the full collapse of our society as we've known it for all this time. And it almost feels like, you know, maybe we could give things like April Fool's Day a rest since we're on the verge of the end of days here. And that could be another reason why it might be worth it to just think about letting go of the comics, because it's hard to feel like there's a lot of future left here to continue this journey, to really turn the corner and get to a place where I'm on track. It's almost like by the time that happens, the world will really be over, you know. That's, and I know that's a cynical way of looking at it, but, and I'm thinking maybe what I have to do is either take a break from social media or at least from the news, because it's all these big things that I can't personally do anything about, but it will ultimately wind up affecting my life, that distract from this whole ability to think positively and envision. Like, I've been noticing that it's like I'm reading The Secret, I'm doing the gratitude journal, I'm trying to picture the life that I want and believe that I deserve it. But at the same time, I think there's a part of my brain, what could be overriding all of those efforts is this sort of underlying fear of, like, we're on the verge of complete destruction. It constantly feels like it's all, like, really close to being over. And it sucks to know that I can't do anything about it. Like, I just watched this show on Netflix, this movie called Three Body Problem. It's not a movie, it's a show, I just said. It's a series. Ugh. This is what being tired will do to you. Called Three Body Problem, which I was a little reluctant to get into because it's created for the screen with Netflix by the guys who were responsible for Game of Thrones. And while, yes, their first couple seasons of that show are epic and amazing still, by the time it gets to the end, they totally dropped the ball. And I kind of am loath to let myself get attached to something just for that to be where it winds up again, you know. But at the same time, the premise of this show is pretty cool, and it has to deal with, I won't spoil too much of it, but it has to deal with, you know, making contact with aliens and the idea of, which is something I think both Stephen Hawking and Carl Sagan kind of warned about, the idea of if we reach out to make contact, we have to be concerned that there's no guarantee that who we get in contact with will be good guys, you know? what happens if we bring about our own demise by getting the attention of a species or something like that that didn't even know we existed, but now that they do, they're coming to conquer us, you know? They're coming to take over. They're Columbusing. Not to trigger anybody out there. And it's interesting because the show deals with the premise of knowing that a threat is on the way, but also because of the physics of space, it wouldn't be getting here for at least 4 centuries. And so do we do anything about it now? Do we wait a little while? You know, what do we do? 4 centuries is a long time. And I feel like that's how I used to think about the future as a kid, was all these things that they're like, oh yeah, you know, global warming and climate change. They didn't call it climate change back then. They called it global warming. It was like, well, if it does happen, it's going to happen so far down the line. I definitely won't be alive for it, you know? So, and maybe by then there'll be people much smarter who will have better technology and they'll be able to do something to avoid it. And suddenly it feels like it's going to be tomorrow, you know, and you start to think, well, that whole idea of always thinking we had time down the road to deal with this really didn't pan out, did it? And it's interesting that I also feel like every time I start to creep into one of these type of existential territories, all of a sudden there's some piece of pop culture that deals exactly with what I'm thinking about and what I'm dealing with. And I don't know. That might be a little egotistical or egocentric to think that there's a connection there. It's probably pure coincidence, but it's interesting because it does let you kind of, it gives you another perspective. It lets you shine a light on part of what you're thinking about from a perspective you might not have considered before, which I think kind of falls into the one of the few purposes left we can look at for having entertainment like this. You know, with Greek theater, it was always the idea that it was supposed to educate and entertain. And I think in modern times, especially in the conspiracy theory community, the idea of what we call entertainment is really much more of like a brainwashing mechanism, far less about educating, but definitely about entertaining in a way that, you know, keeps us distracted, keeps us complacent, but also, you know, affects or influences the way we think so that we're more controllable, we're more in the ballpark of where the powers that be want us to be. So it's hard for me to watch a show like this and not think, well, this is probably based on something real. Maybe we've actually got some documentation, some intercepted transmissions. Maybe they do invoke the wow signal at one point. I think it's in the second episode of the show. And the wow signal is a real thing. It was a real occurrence where Ohio State for, I don't know, I forget how many seconds it was, got information coming back to their radio telescopes that resembled what it probably would be to receive a transmission from somebody else. And it was in response to a signal they sent out. So at the same time, they've never been able to translate it. They've never been able to convert it into any kind of understandable language, but it's just the fact that it happened and it only was recorded in one place at Ohio State University. It's, you know, one of those things that makes you go, you know, for all the skeptics out there, something spoke back. And who knows how much that actually has happened before or since. That was just the one they told us about. So, you know, it's that whole idea of mixing just enough truth with the lies to make people believe. And now when I see these shows, I'm all like, oh, is this them letting us know? Like, are we going to be invaded in 400 years? Or is it going to be more like 4 years? And they were just kind of putting the show out there to sort of seed the idea. I don't know if anybody's been paying attention. We had this bridge collapse in Baltimore. Pretty big deal. Important bridge. And not long after, a show or a movie on Netflix was released called Leave the World Behind, which featured a tanker losing control and winding up on a beach in Long Island. You know, I'm sure if you look for these things, they're there, right? Like, if you want to see these things, you will see them. But I guess ultimately what this comes back to is the trying to hang on to the positivity when there's all these kind of things creeping up that are undeniable and hard to, I don't know, fold in with all the sort of positive energy and the progress. You know, you kind of get that feeling that, you know, no matter what happens, I started too late. I waited too long. I didn't think about it until it was too late. And I don't know. I've always had this strange kind of concept in my mind that, and it came from when I was a kid and watched Terminator, and I saw these people like kind of living in this sort of rubble, post-apocalyptic future. And there's a sequence in the first movie where Michael Biehn's character, Kyle Reese, comes back in to a, I don't know, hideout, a base, whatever the hell you want to call it, after being out on patrol doing whatever his daily routine is. And there are all these people kind of huddled around trash can fires and just kind of sitting in little different groups. And like, there were a couple of kids like playing with toy guns and they were shooting at him and he was pretending to shoot back at them. And I remember watching that thinking, I'm probably going to wind up being one of the older people in a place like that, who every day all the young kids gather around and we sit around one of these trash can fires and they ask me to tell them about what the world was like before it ended. And it stuck with me through most of my life in the back of my head, this idea of like, I'm going to see some shit. I'm going to live through it. I'm going to survive. And maybe the purpose of me surviving is to be able to tell the next generation what the previous generation was like. And I think there used to be something that felt a little bit almost poetic about this idea. In a strange way. Or maybe it was just at least feeling a sense of purpose. Maybe there was something about it in that regard that made it feel like, you know, I can be okay with it if there is a reason for it. Like if I'm supposed to inspire somebody in that new reality to want to get the world to a better place, more like what it was before it all went bad. And then I see the way my nephews who are like a month away from turning 10. And I tried to put on The Secret of Nim for them, which is a cartoon that I watched growing up. And I'm trying to think of how young I was. It was definitely elementary school. It had to be no later than first or second grade when that was a thing for me. And you know, they couldn't even give it a couple minutes. They were instantly like, yeah, I'm just going to go watch my iPad. They'll be glued to their iPads watching YouTube for hours on end. And meanwhile, this thing that I don't know, like to me, the kind of the shapes and colors on the screen and the voices were always enough for me to just be drawn in. And so I start to wonder, are the young people who are going to be sitting around those trash can fires with me listening to what I have to say going to even be able to fathom what it's like? I saw another video today on Facebook. I only watched part of it, and I was basically just reading the subtitles. I wasn't in a position to be able to listen to the audio. But it was talking about how anybody under the age of 30, so I'm trying to think, wait, it has to be under the age of 25, when they try to watch The Matrix, it doesn't, the original, the first Matrix, there's sort of like not the mind-blowing impact that it had on those of us who saw it in the theater, having no idea what we were getting ourselves into, and how so much of it hasn't really held up or aged well. And meanwhile, those of us who saw it when it was new, we still have that same affinity for, like, yeah, man, look at how cool Neo looks. Look at how cool Agent Smith is. And how, like, the only thing that has sort of survived from it, this guy David Pargin was saying, is, like, the idea of red pill, you know, and that people use it as a term for, like, oh, you've woken up to the reality. And how that term has been sort of co-opted by certain subcultures or subsections of social media now. And how even, like, mentioning it starts to immediately pull you in different political directions, right? And it's just, I don't know. I struggle with so much of it because I never expected movies to age one way or another. You know, like I often say, when I was little and I would go to my grandparents' house on Sundays for dinner and my grandfather would be watching the old Westerns, the old black and white Westerns, I didn't sit there and go, like, oh, this is so cringe. How could you like this? How could you watch this? I kind of look at him watching it and think, man, this guy saw this when he was young. This is what this guy watched when he was, you know, my age. And even if it was boring or didn't keep my attention, I didn't have the sort of, like, rejection reaction that I see coming from. And now, granted, my nephews are 9. That's kind of on the young side. They're just starting to learn how to pay attention to things that they like and things that they don't like. But I feel like there are people who are older than them that express their disdain in the same way, you know, like, oh, that's so cringe, or, oh, you know, like, we don't know how to coexist. We don't know how to relate. There used to be, like, sort of a poetic and graceful way to not be able to relate, but to at least respect the age and respect the people who are older than you, respect for your elders. And while I can totally understand this generation, the modern generation's disappointment with their elders for letting the world fall into the sort of disarray that it has fallen into, and I think there's something to be said for the concept of being upset that you're inheriting a world in the shape that it's in, but I don't know that there's a sense of respect for the fact that that is what came before you, that is what laid the path before you, that is the reason that you have the position of privilege to be able to even criticize, right? It's a little bit of a slippery slope, I guess, to start thinking about these things, because just by bringing it up, you sort of automatically wind up on one side or another of the political divide of looking at the world like this. Which I think I alluded to a couple episodes back about why can't people just like things without having to be pulled into a political debate about what those things are. And mostly it's like movies and TV shows, and how that somehow now enlists you in the ranks of all the people who are ready to go to war over the most minute things. And you're kind of like, I really just don't want to have to care about things that aren't so much the things I need to tackle on the day to day. And even if I have opinions about these things, that I don't feel like I have the energy or the opportunity or the bandwidth to really care about, if I happen to mention that opinion, I shouldn't have to now be in the friggin' Thunderdome having to either, you know, die, literally die on the hill, or fight with somebody else to get them to submit to die on their hill. You know, it's like we really have devolved you start to think this is how the world of Mad Max would have happened. Except we don't see any electric cars in Mad Max, which is an interesting idea that they didn't foresee that. Everything is still about gasoline and oil in that future. But it was a future that was, you know, imagined in the 70s and 80s. So maybe to them, even, you know, autonomous cars and the Internet of Things and smart homes were just Star Trek-y type stuff. It would have been nice to have gotten to the utopian type world that would have led to Star Trek, you know, where even though we had all these devices and Internet of Things and smart homes, you didn't get that sense that they were all connected to like the Illuminati hive mind. You know, it really did feel like the utopian society, everything was just there for your convenience. People were still writing books, people were still painting. In fact, they were freed up. They had the time to be able to do that. I shared a meme I saw today on Facebook that said, the only problem I have with AI is that we're moving it in the wrong direction. You know, I wanted AI to be able to, you know, do my laundry and wash my dishes so that I had time to, you know, paint pictures and do art and be creative. Instead, AI is taking the artwork and the creative stuff so that I have more time to do the dishes and the laundry. And it's like, yeah, how in the hell did we let that get so twisted? How did we let that be where we're winding up? Now, granted, I'm saying this as I just discovered this week that one of the pieces of software I have in my repertoire of Adobe products is this thing called Adobe Firefly, which is basically Adobe's generative AI, where I can just type in a text prompt and it'll come up with artwork, you know, out of the blue, which is kind of cool. And it's fun, but it does feel like cheating. And it's really hard for me to wrap my head around evolving and adapting into this world where, you know, what we would have considered cheating a long time ago, not even that long, is being promoted and being sort of openly accepted and looked at as the way of the future. You know, half the gurus now, when you're seeing these, like, you know, different coaching and courses that are being promoted as this is going to be the thing that lets you quit your 9-to-5, that lets you, you know, work 2 hours a day with nothing more than your laptop and Wi-Fi. And it feels so gimmicky. It feels so used car salesman. But at the same time, you have to think with the way the job market is, and I've especially been thinking about this, that is sort of going to be the only hope for some of us because of our circumstances. You know, I've seen enough articles recently to fully know that I'm not crazy for feeling like ageism is a thing. It certainly hasn't been helping a mid-40s person go from freelance to fully employed, even though I'm celebrating the 1 month mark of being with the company. You know, even though it's only on a part-time basis, it's still a huge improvement in the cash flow department and in the feeling like I've starting to rebuild something or starting to get back onto a path of prosperity. But I still see tons of jobs listed, more of them than I can happily comment are offering a pathetic rate, hourly rate or salary, like half of what I was making when I originally started 20 years ago. And you couple that with all the news about how expensive the housing is getting and how it's expected to increase this year by another couple percentage points. And while that might be great for people who own property, because now your property is worth more, for the vast majority of us who have yet to own anything, it is a horrifying moment of time to be in the struggle. And I've also been struggling with the whole idea of the belief part of the positive thinking, you know, and one of the things I recently read is that what could be overriding, you know, activating the law of attraction to you is when you're saying to yourself, okay, you know, I envision this life where I'm financially free and I've got hundreds of thousands of dollars and I don't have to worry about the price of items. I can afford to live in a place of my own and I can afford the groceries and still have time to relax and be entertained and go out and do things. And you're supposed to just, you know, begin envisioning that and living as if that's already true. And that's supposed to be what brings it to you. And my mind goes, no, dude, but none of that's true. Even if it's true in the future, it's not true right now. And I think that totally trips up this whole thing. And all of these, what I feel like is the weirdest part of all of it is even on the days where the cynical side is surfacing like this, I know that there were days that I felt the optimism. I know there were days that I felt better. Even sometimes those are the days where I realize I'm feeling better because of how suddenly depressed I got. And I'm like, well, if I feel this bad now, I definitely was feeling better before this. And it seems like all those days are always couched in between or surrounded by days where I'm thinking more like this. Really thinking that, is this whole thing worth it? Is there ever really going to be a way out? Am I actually going to recover? And then I think that's what causes these morning panic attacks now, is that sort of waking up with that thought of like, no, man, you can't let this be it. You know, this can't be the way it goes. There has to be a time after this. And that starts to become a level of desperation that, much like when you're trying to hack it in sales, when you're selling out of desperation, that shit affects you. If you're already not getting the sales and you're starting to get desperate about it, that pushes the sales away even further. Well, it's supposed to be very much the same with the law of attraction and trying to bring the rest of your life into that kind of a new energy field. So I'm really trying to find the next like step being, and I just ordered another couple books off of my suggested reading list. I'm hoping that will help, but I really would like to find a way to do this whole like raising the vibration. Even if it from what I understand, it does require a certain amount of active thinking, you know, actively combating the intrusive negative thoughts, where even like accepting that they're still going to be there. It's just that once they start, you're able to somehow think it off or turn it off by thinking, no, everything's fine. And I just feel like it's so disingenuous. It's so hard to not feel like you're just lying to yourself, you know? I guess the fact that I even have even a little bit of my mind that's thinking that is pretty much proof that I still have a long ways to go of trying to get this law of attraction, power of positive thinking thing yielding results, you know, which is, you know, I mean, I guess I shouldn't feel pressure. I don't know necessarily where it's coming from aside from myself and how much of that is still tied to, you know, loss of self-confidence and pride and lost pride and feeling like I'm not a huge, huge fan of who I see in the mirror. On some days I am. And some of the nights when I'm saying my affirmations and trying to think positively, I do get a feeling of optimism and excitement about myself. But I think for the most part, I'm still punishing myself for allowing this to happen. And yeah, you know, some of the stuff I was talking about last week with the loneliness and this sort of feeling like I don't want to get used to feeling alone. But at the same time, I know that not being alone will definitely throw the path off again, throw me off track from really achieving that level that I need to in order to feel like I've come out of this onto the other side and have evolved and changed and grown from it, you know? And it's hard to want that, but also at the same time be feeling sort of like I've come a long way. I can't imagine that there's still so much left to go, but there is. And I don't know, you know, it's like I don't know how to do it, but at the same time, I don't have any other options. So it does feel like it's trying to heal out of desperation. I don't know. I feel like this is a little bit of a rambly. I kind of wish that I would be in a more like he is risen, you know, Dave has come out of the cave and he's a new version of himself. He's Gandalf the White now, you know? But as long as you don't stop, right? As long as you just keep going, as long as you keep getting up in the morning, you're at least still moving. You're at least still trying. And I do have a coach in my corner who's trying to tell me to stop downplaying that every one of the small victories deserves to be celebrated. And by doing so, you build in the more positive view of yourself and you build in the idea of being the positive, higher vibration version of yourself that will begin to attract all of the things that technically you already have. The universe is supposed to be so ready to deliver on all the things that you want that it's really you not believing you deserve them that's holding them at bay. And I feel like I've heard it so much. I've read it so many times in so many different places. I've heard so many different speakers say it. And there's a part of me that always says, yeah, but they're this person on a stage, or there's this person who wrote a book who you put some money in their pocket for buying a copy of. And it's so easy to say all these things when you don't have to worry about paying your bills. You don't have to worry about paying the IRS. You don't have to worry about, you know, being able to sustain yourself. And I keep trying to remind myself that they were in my position once too, before these books sold, before they were the ones on the stage. And I just keep going, all right, how do I cross that gap? What are the steps I need to take? When will that become apparent? And so I guess I'm still trying to find my faith, because if you truly had faith, you wouldn't need to know how. I think part of me is so worried that if I throw that kind of caution to the wind without caring about the how, is it possible I'm going to say no to the opportunity that would have been the how? Is it possible I'm going to be scared off? You know, I still think about that one job interview I went on in January. And I was thinking, like, you know, it would have been so good. It seemed like such a good opportunity. I can't believe I let it slip through my fingers. And I almost feel like I sort of self-sabotaged in a way. And I know regretting it is not doing me any favors, but I think part of what let me do it was thinking, like, well, you know, if it's meant to be, it'll be, right? And so as much as it's about what I want, if you have faith, it's also supposed to be about what the universe has in mind. And so if you're really open to that philosophy, it means there's no way you would miss what you're meant to get, because it will get to you. You will not be able to overlook it. You will not be able to say no to it. Like, the universe will conspire in order to make sure you take the thing that was meant for you. So there's no point in worrying about whether you'll recognize it or not. But I know that since I was a kid, since the same time when I envisioned myself as this post-apocalyptic sage, I also somehow picked up along the way this idea that, like, most people who don't get to where they want to get to missed an opportunity and or didn't recognize an opportunity for what it was, didn't have the faith in an opportunity that it would be this thing. And one of the things a lot of the books I've been reading all have in common is saying that sometimes the thing that is what you were meant for seems strange or doesn't seem like the thing you've been wanting. And you have to be open to that. And it sometimes will require, as part of that faith, going against the sort of popular opinions of people who mean well, you know, like it would probably be like friends and family, but they're not being able to envision it either could be what throws off your ability to envision it for yourself and therefore makes you shy away from or ignore. You know, it'd be like finding out that I'm really good at building bicycles, you know, or something like that. And after building one or two, suddenly I get outreach from a company that says, hey, we want you to come out to Colorado for a month and build bicycles with us. And you think, well, I never really pictured myself as a bicycle builder. Why would I do that? But this, and it's not even a super big amount of money, but hell, who knows? It has been fun building these bikes and they do come out pretty cool. Let's go see. And then what happens is you go out there and you meet somebody who came to you with a concept for a bike and you did such a good job to say, hey, you know what? We're doing a documentary about bicycle builders. And then you wind up getting interviewed by somebody who then goes, oh, you also tell stories? Oh, you also have a podcast? You know what I mean? Like, it's those kinds of things that, like, you never know, right? It's the same reason that people are saying, dude, you should go and just work at a restaurant because you never know who you're going to wind up talking to, whose table you're going to be waiting on, that they see something in you and you go from, you know, waiting tables to suddenly becoming a DJ on a radio station somewhere, you know, or a president of programming because you just had casually mentioned that if you had your own cable station, this is the kind of programming you would run. And someone goes, dude, that's genius. It's all of those voices, the gremlins in your head that tell you that that is ridiculous to even imagine because there's no way it's going to happen. Yet there are people that things like that have happened to. So I have also been feeling like the sort of confusion of all of this, the sort of wishy-washiness of it, has been holding me back from actually sitting down and working on any writing lately, even though I've been like really like having so many ideas and so many sort of, you know, lightning bolt thoughts of like, oh my God, that thing I was thinking connects perfectly to this other thing that I started writing 5 years ago, or, oh, that concept I came up with 6 years ago. Maybe that was what this thing is. And I feel like it really is the time where I need to sit down and start dedicating some time to working on stuff like that. And between getting used to the new sort of routine with being an employee again and still also feeling at the same time that I need to fill the other half of my available time with another job. So I'm still sending out resumes. I'm still applying places and I'm still getting disappointed when I get the rejections, you know, which plays a whole other level into why it's hard to be optimistic, right? Because it's sort of trying to figure out how to interpret that message of all of those rejections when a majority of them are ones I felt more than qualified for. Like those should have been the miraculous moments of breakthrough. How do I spin or how do I reframe interpreting that other than, well, every single one of those opportunities was probably not the ideal you had in mind and would have led you down another path that would have still landed you in a place where you might be miserable. And so by avoiding them, you're still on the path of possibility, on the path of opportunity, on the path of the path that will take you to your prosperity. I also love that by the time I'm ready to get to go to bed and fall asleep, I can get to these moments of feeling, oh, you know what? There is still hope. Even though if we started off the conversation in a less hopeful place, talking it through has kind of moved some, you know, blinding tree limbs out of the way, and all of a sudden a path is appearing here. And I have to tell myself, tomorrow morning I will wake up and I will still feel like this. Tomorrow morning I will wake up and I will not have anxiety. Tomorrow morning I will wake up and take another step onto this path that I've just discovered. And even by saying and hope that that helps me avoid the panic attack is almost like still leaving that door open for the anxiety and the panic. And this is the complexity of all of this. And I really just, I almost wish like an angel would come down and just kind of put their hand on my shoulder, which in some magical way that the universe has that I don't fully understand, just makes all the bad shit disappear. Because it is also very easy as part of my journey in the spiritual and going to church and thinking in these terms. It is also very easy to kind of see all of this as the enemy trying to keep me broken, trying to keep me from achieving what I could achieve, achieving what I might be meant to achieve, because that would be me making my contribution to the world, making my contribution to being part of the plan of the divine and the higher levels of thinking and that created us. And of course, for every person that the enemy is able to stop from getting there, it makes them stronger and makes the world a worse place. And so it's very easy for me to see it that way. But how do I combat it? So that's where I'm at now in this 45th or 46th installment. We're coming really close to a full year anniversary of entries of this diary hitting the airwaves. I'm sort of inspired by that, you know. It does feel really good to be able to say that in this time of turmoil, I've been able to still be productive to a level like this, even if it feels like it's only for myself, really. And for those of you who've been on the journey with me, whatever good you've been able to take from it, whatever solace or sense of community or, I don't know, other reflection that has been inspired by listening to me, you know, have a panic attack in the middle of the show or talk about how songs can really affect you, and realizing that patterns can repeat until you get yourself out of them. It's been a smorgasbord of different things on this show, and I think back and cringe about some of it, and some of it I think back and I'm really kind of like, oh wow, yeah, I'm glad I was able to start seeing things that way. And so, you know, as always, I hope some of this is helpful. I hope there are some folks who see this as a beacon in the darkness and is helping them find their way to shore safely and want to continue on their own journey as well. As always, there are ways to get in touch and become part of the conversation. We've only done one of them, but it'd be great to do an interview with somebody else who's been on a healing journey like this, who might have some advice, some tips, or just feel like they'd like to share their story. Because I know there's still so many stories out there. In any case, we're continuing to work our way through the intermission because the next act is ready to begin. And I'm happy to be here for it. And I hope you all are too. So, until next time.
You've been listening to a production of the Hollow Nine Network. Feeling It, Healing It, A Diary of Recovery, featuring Dave Maresca. Thank you for listening to Feeling It, Healing It, A Diary of Recovery. Dave Maresca is not a trained medical professional, psychologist, psychiatrist, or licensed professional trained in providing therapeutic mental health care. This podcast is an account of his life experiences and meant to be just that. Any advice or suggestions made in the extemporaneous dialogue of the podcast is not intended to be medical or legal advice. If such advice is what you're seeking, you are encouraged to seek out the services of a licensed professional. The Hollow Nine Network and Dave Maraska assume no liability or responsibility for the information provided in these episodes.